So earlier this year, I was in the World Economic Forum in Davos, and there was a forum on menstrual health. And then the lady was like, okay, next year, what do we want to hear? You know, what do we want to talk about with regards to period poverty and menstrual health? And I stood up, I said, I really don't want to hear anymore. We're in 2025. Really, if there are people on the ground with solutions, we just need to finance those and get them going.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models. Welcome back to Circularity FM and our series on circular entrepreneurship in Kenya. In this episode, we hear from Madhvi Dalal, founder of PadMed, a social enterprise that tackles period poverty and plastic pollution through the production of reusable menstrual pads. Madhvi talks about their circular model of manufacturing pads from textile waste, PadMed's educational program to destigmatize menstruation, and their B2B partnership model that enables them to distribute pads to those in need while creating employment opportunities for marginalized women. But before we start, as usual, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Madhvi, thanks for making the time to talk about PadMed. Before we start, who are you and why did you start PadMed in the first place?
Okay, thank you for having me, Patrick. My name is Madhvi, and I have been in Kenya for the last decade, actually. But by profession, I'm a pharmacist. I used to own a pharmacy in Wales, in the UK. And by profession, I'm also a dancer and a yoga instructor. So when I moved to Kenya, although I became a pharmacist, I didn't really practice. So I was just looking for things to do, get out of the house. And I was basically teaching yoga in some of the slums here in Nairobi so that I could just understand the community a little bit more and also practice. So as I was doing the circuit, and it took some time actually, over 1 or 2 years, when I finally, you know, got a rapport with the girls, and then they said they were missing school not because they were sick, but because of their period. And that was a bit alien to me. You know, I said, well, what do you mean because of your period? And that's how I came about, well, not founding PadMed, because then there was a lot of legwork, a lot of understanding, but that's how it initiated.
Okay. And what's the reason behind missing school because of the period?
Yeah. So, well, basically it's a multifold kind of issue. In Kenya, the statistics is apparently 65% of the girls and women cannot afford pads. And that's what's termed as period poverty. But when I heard these girls and I said, okay, you're missing school because of it's defined as lack of access or affordability of pads or menstrual solutions. So as I was walking around and, you know, doing my kind of documenting about really how big is this problem and more importantly, why is there a problem? So when I was going to rural areas, I used to hear we all doing wonderful things. I remember when I was upcountry once and there was a street woman, and she basically said that she would go through other people's trash so that she could find some pads so she could just wear it for a couple of hours and, you know, be able to sell her tomatoes. So those kind of dramatic things obviously got to me. Other girls very often use mattresses or blankets or pieces of cloth. Some girls also use leaves, and they actually compete with goats for that kind of waterproof leaf. But most importantly, I think what really shifted me and what I was doing was I was interviewing or kind of documenting it at an orphanage here in Nairobi in a slum. And we were just going through, you know, where'd you get your pads from? Where'd you get your pads from with the teenage girls? And so one of them said, I get them from here. And I said, no, I know you don't. And that's why we're here. So where do you get your pads from? And she said, no, I get them from here. So what she was insinuating, and she was speaking Kiswahili, was that she used to give transactional sex to a teacher there and get her pads. And I said, well, really, you know, this needs to be authentic. This place is so small. I mean, I just want to, you know, walk me through this. And I remember she walked me through the back, and I remember how I felt, and I was feeling really quite sick. And then I thought, well, you know, she goes through it month on month. And then she ended that conversation just by really being blank in the face. And she said, depending on the quality of sex, she gets one or two packs of pads. So that really brought me a notch down or two. That's when I said, you know, I really need to stop just walking around and documenting. I really just need to do something. The only thing is I didn't know what to do. I just knew I didn't want to give out disposable pads because it was just not sustainable. And it was causing a lot of pollution. Hence, one thing led to another. You know, I was in Lamu Yoga Festival, and by coincidence, some of my colleagues were talking about reusable pads in Philippines. So, yeah, and then the story went from there.
Okay. So tell us more about the story, how it went from there. What did you start and what are you doing right now?
Yeah, so I started pretty naively. I mean, they taught me how to make reusable pads by hand. And I said, would you mind if we implement this here in Kenya? You know, I can already see the need here. And even whilst I was in Lamu, I phoned for some of my friends and I said, look, I'm coming back. Let's just do this. And we went to the first school. Although we're with material, you know, with old t-shirts and needles and threads, and said, okay, now this is what we're going to do. Obviously, that was very naive. It was just, you know, I really thought that teaching boys and girls in schools, they would sustain themselves or make enough for their mums, etc. That program clearly did not work out. Then I thought, okay, if it's fine, if this doesn't work out, how about I empower women or mums in the communities by teaching them how to make them? And then they would then, you know, make enough for themselves and maybe even sell for the community and make little businesses. That again was pretty naive because I used to set up, I'd call them a hub, but just say one or two machines in the middle of wherever and train a group of women. And then once I left, and the resources finished, I was expecting them to continue. And what I found after following through with this was that the quality was compromised. And, you know, there was just so much other things like, you know, they would sell at different prices and compete against each other. And it just was not making sense. And more importantly, I didn't want to cause an even bigger problem of infections, which is what I was trying to avoid. So eventually I scrapped all that. And well, at the heart of it was still to employ women and some men who wouldn't generally be able to get jobs or were struggling. So that is still part of our program. But then we had to completely diversify and make sure that we were in control of all the standards. We started speaking to the Kenyan government, Kenya Bureau of Standards, to say, okay, there are no standards, minimum standards for reusable products. So we formed a committee. Eventually, a few years down the line, we actually had some standards. And so now it's a different program.
Okay. And as you mentioned, a few years down the line, when did you start documenting it? So just to get an idea of the time span.
So when this idea started was in 2018, actually. That's when, you know, things were happening. And I guess when I said, okay, I need to do something was 2018. I didn't quite formalize until 2021, though, because I was just trying to see what works, what doesn't work. And then everything was different. You know, in Kenya, all the laws are different. Even opening a company is, you know, is a process. So I had to learn a lot about all that.
Okay. Yeah. How does the process look like? How are you doing the pads right now?
So right now we're still transitioning, but what has been successful is we basically work with three pillars. We say we manufacture reusable pads, but that is actually not our main gig. So with the three pillars are education, empowerment, and the environment. So by education, which is really what has been helping us be successful and moving, so we run programs within schools, which is basically we have workshops for boys and girls. We make sure that boys definitely attend our workshops, you know, to create this awareness, but more importantly, to destigmatize and to make sure there's peer-to-peer conversations which are healthy, etc. Then we have other workshops within communities for women and men. So this could be, for example, pastoralist communities who really don't talk about this and maybe even need some kind of information. So we work with them. Then we also have a program called MHM in the workplace, where we would be able to go into a factory setting and speak to the admin and say, okay, let's look at these wash facilities. Basically, the idea is to increase the efficiency of the women labor. And many textile companies, for example, are predominantly single women who are employed there. So how can we help the company and how can we help the women? And then recently we've launched something called MHH clubs in schools. So basically 15 kids from a school would get together and have a weekly club. And the idea is for them to be able to obviously be informed. We train them through this, but also give peer-to-peer assistance to each other, make sure there's no teasing, make sure if there's any girl who would maybe have a quote unquote irregular period, where would they get help, or same thing in the community. So those are our educational programs. And then further than that, if we have a long-term partner, for example, we would train their people on the ground. So making sure that this is more sustainable, long-lasting. So it's not just us coming in once, giving the education and then leaving. The idea is to give people on the ground accurate information, which they can deliver in their own cultural context. So long-winded answer, but that's the education part. Then we have the empowerment part, which is, I was telling you earlier, we train and employ men and women, mainly women, who may be quote-unquote marginalized. So for example, we have a small factory in the prison or for ex-prisoners or for teen mums. That has recently changed. You know, you were asking me, what does the program look like? Since January, we've changed it slightly. So we still have that. But because we had to scale up, we have another industrial manufacturing, which gives us the capacity. And then finally, we have the environment part, where we have this full vertical. We work very closely with the textile companies who actually donate the cotton seeds. So hundreds of women are employed in the farms here in Kenya. By the time the cotton is harvested into our product, it's just 6 weeks. We are trying to work with circular economy here, you know, guided by UNICEF Environment Hub, to make sure that we are circular as a company, but also helping the textile industries here to become as circular as possible. So, for example, we use their waste, which was otherwise alternatively steamed, because they just, that's what they did. So we use their waste. And, you know, for example, one of the companies here has become fully solar powered. And then our product is also reusable. It can last at least 5 years. Mine have lasted 7.5 years. It is natural. It's breathable and all these things. So we found through, you know, through my walking, that a lot of plastic pollution, actually it's not small. Plastic pollution because of disposable products is huge. You know, for example, if the girls do have a disposable pad, where they're going to dispose of it, it's probably down the pit latrine, which clogs up the school toilets. Or in Kibera, they actually call flying pads. You know, there's no waste collection. So when somebody is using a disposable pad, she just throws it over her head. You know, it's either taken over by a dog or it lands up into the water, you know, things like that. So, I mean, obviously when I started this was just, okay, girls need to go to school. We need to find a solution. But through our program, we really have found that the plastic pollution is also very huge.
Your journey is amazing. I mean, you started with documenting one specific issue you kind of came across, and seeing the scale and variety of activities you're doing, this is really breathtaking.
Yeah, the other thing we found out, I mean, through also this, that if you go into prison in Kenya, and even if you've served your time, whether it's 5 years or more or less, whenever you do come out, you will still not have a certificate of good standing, which means you're probably very unlikely to get a formal job anyway. So the rate of recidivism in Kenya is really, really high. And so what we are trying to do, we've learned a little bit here, is what we're trying to do is try and employ these women. But when we first did that, you know, we really thought, okay, this is how it's going to work. This is how it's going to be. This is what our capacity is going to be per month. But we didn't factor in the emotional and mental trauma, which we may have to deal with. So that was a whole new learning. So it's not as simple as we would have, you know, naively expected.
And to grasp a bit the magnitude, can you give us some numbers, be it like number of pets, number of trainings, people you've come in contact with?
Yeah. I mean, it's forever changing. Basically, at the end of last month, it was 93,000 something, which are immediate beneficiaries of pad kits, actually. That amounts to about 800,000 pads. But like I told you, part of our program, actually equal part of our program, is also speaking to the boys. So overall, 150,000 beneficiaries through this. That does not include the women we employ. That does not include the advocates we have on the ground. That does not include, you know, for example, whoever is part of our chain. However, we have translated this into the amount of days in schools, which are saved. You know, how many girls are actually going to school? How many girls are actually not missing their exams? Because Patrick, we were, you know, about a couple of years ago, I was in Lamu doing the same, which is actually where we started. So I have a soft spot for that place. But some girls were missing. So KCPE exams are, how can I say, anyway, the equivalent of primary, for them to be able to go to secondary school as a primary, they need to pass those. Some girls were actually missing those exams just because they were on the period, just because they couldn't go. And that was so heartbreaking because they actually don't get another chance. I mean, there's no parent in that situation who's going to say, okay, try again next year. So when we gave out those pads, we followed up 3 months and then we followed up a year after, and no girl missed any exams. And it's just so beautiful just to even understand that it's actually such a simple thing. So not attending school, you know, already we work a lot in rural areas actually. And already, for example, pastoralist communities, already if you're a girl who's going to school, it's a privilege. And if you're going to secondary school, it really is a privilege. And I understand it. But then if she has been given that chance and she has to then forgo it just because of a menstrual product, that is just so shameful. It's just so unfair. So we really try and work in those areas as much as we can. In fact, we have a great partner in Samburu, for example, where they drill well. So obviously there's water, the communities around there, and it's just so beneficial. So, you know, going to school, being able to go to school is a huge thing. And then we also have statistics on carbon emissions. So, for example, to make a disposable pad, there's an X amount of carbon pollution which goes in there. So by using our pads, how much are we saving? Also, how much plastic pollution is being avoided from the landfills in Kenya? Because frankly, even if you take 65% who cannot afford pad, that amount is huge. We have in millions, basically. And frankly, that's been our winner. Education is one thing, but really plastic pollution has been a winner.
Yeah. Well, it's again amazing to see how connected and intertwined your activities are. What does your funding or financial model look like?
Okay, so our financial model sometimes is a little bit complicated, but our main model is a B2B, so business to business model, which means the end beneficiary, whether it's a woman or a girl or a boy in the ground, would not need to pay, but somebody somewhere has to pay. So for example, our partners would be corporates or other NGOs or the government or individuals or angel donors, etc. So it's not really a charity, but our main aim is basically a social enterprise. So our aim for the business is to make the social impact, environmental impact, and then the profits go back into our business. So that's the main thing. We do have a very, very small arm on retail, which is the reason why it's small is because we just don't have the capacity to expand. We also are in the process of diversifying. So not just making pads, we are trying to work with nursing pads, which are reusable, makeup remover pads and period panties. Everything takes a lot more energy than we first anticipate. So it takes a lot longer. Our team is very small, but it's fierce. So yeah, it's taking us longer than we had envisaged. So we did get a grant, which gave us quite a big boost by Bayer Foundation a couple of years ago. So aside of the grant, we got a lot of recognition, and then, you know, people started saying, okay, these guys are onto something here, so let's give them more attention. So that's how we've been surviving.
Okay. Can you give one or two examples of B2B companies, how that looks like a program if they were to start with you?
Yeah. So for example, we have a partner in Samburu. I mean, they are based in the US, the Samburu Project. So what they did was, you know, as when they drill the wells, they suddenly see that, okay, there's communities are growing around the wells. What's in the school growing? That's actually the first thing that happens. A school grows before anything, before even a health center, a school grows there. Once the school grows, they find out, okay, now these girls need this and they need this. Hence, we come in. you know, we give them the education, we give them the products, we follow up with them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a whole, quite an old relationship we've had. What else? Oh, I'll tell you something really nice about them, actually. So when I first started working in Samburu, which was maybe about 5 years ago, we actually, it was during COVID. I said, okay, everything is shut in Kenya. Schools are not shut. Business has to shut. Then I moved up country and I started getting SOS calls from people in Samburu and actually other places saying that, you know, there is just so much teen pregnancies now because literally the parents have lost their jobs. The girls are going into transactional sex and it is really rife. You need to do something. They need menstrual products. So we started working there again. We actually went there and the first time with Eliud Kipchoge, who's a very well-known celebrity and athlete. And so he came to speak to the girls saying, this is the right thing to do, continue education, etc. And that was really good. And they, at that time, the girls and the communities, the boys, they were very shy, very, very shy. And since then, every year for Menstrual Health Day, which is on 28th of May, we've been having big events there because of Samburu Project organizing them. And the last one, which is this year, the boys actually made a song on Red called Red, and they were really amazing. You know, they were empowered. There was girls who were having poetry about their menstrual health and how they, it's a great thing. And just so, like, the whole, there's a whole change. There's a whole wave of good change there. So anyway, I digress. So those are the kind of partners we work with. Other partners include local conservancies. So those who own lodges, you know, big chains who own lodges in conservancies in Kenya, they basically have a corporate social responsibility to make sure that their communities are well served. So we work with them very closely. And yeah, it's been very powerful because the communities really feel heard. It's been beneficial. We always take a survey after 2 to 6 months on the schools and the women and men to see how they're getting on.
And are there also like companies, international companies with Kenyan operations that reach out and fund one of your operations?
Yeah, it's very much mixed. So these are Kenyan, the ones I'm talking about, the lodges, they're Kenyan. Mm-hmm. Then there are, for example, I mean, the textile companies in Kenya are very supportive of what we do because it's a win-win on both sides. And there could be other companies. Frankly, Patrick, there's always a mix because there are, for example, there are many industries in Kenya. So there's a paint industry which helps us or which says, okay, we actually already work in this area. Would you mind bringing your pads? Things like that. Yeah. So it's very much a mix. And in fact, our partners are also in the UK, in America. And yeah, we have friends everywhere, really.
Okay. Talking about partners everywhere. So what kind of partners are you looking for?
I think this is a mix again. We would look for partners who work with circular economy, already, you know, fund projects which are circular. For example, if we say we have 1.57 tons of CO2 emissions avoided, you know, what would that mean to a partner? Or we have 72 million disposable pads, which are not going to the landfill anymore. What does that really mean to a partner? And how can we transfer that into a monetary value or into, say, a grant or help us evaluate also, you know, what does this really mean? In terms of NGOs who work with women and girls and keeping girls in education, you know, gender equity, you know, if we say 3.5 million girls have actually continued to go to school now, what does that mean? And how can they support us to say, okay, what does it really require for this girl to go to school? What is the budget, etc.? So those are the kind of partners we would look for. And those are actually our current statistics is what I've just said. So that's one thing. We would also always be very grateful for people who actually could help us scale up. And so all this, like I said, we are trying to franchise right now. So we realize that this is basically a global problem. You know, I'm on the roundtable for the Welsh government for the same thing. And we also very much realize that we can't do this on our own. I mean, there's, even if we had to, Patrick, you know, we get inquiries from different parts of Africa all the time. So even if we have to send our product over to Uganda, it just does not make sense, sadly, just the taxes more than the product. So it doubles the cost of the goods. It does not make sense. So we have realized this and we would like to franchise this. And you know, it just makes more sense for people to be able to do it in their own cultural context. You know, what may work for us may be slightly different, maybe in Rwanda. So we want professional help to help us franchise, to help us scale, to help us make sure that there is a bigger market that we are tapping into in an accurate fashion. And yeah, so aside of monetary and partners in the pads itself, there's just a bigger picture here. And the reason why we've come up with this, I mean, we've been talking about this for over a year now, because so earlier this year, I was in the World Economic Forum in Davos, and there was a forum on menstrual health. And then the lady was like, okay, next year, what do we want to hear? You know, what do we want to talk about with regards to period poverty and menstrual health? And I stood up, I said, I really don't want to hear anymore. I mean, this conversation, we're in 2025. Really, if there are people on the ground with solutions, we just need to finance those and get them going. I mean, I'm not saying I have the only solution, but I am very confident that I have a solution here in my context. So I'm willing to give, you know, things like getting the KEB certification or getting the IP for the product. That is all a lot of sweat. But if I could give that information to somebody who's really trying, that just makes so much more sense. We could just cruise through this. Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. Madhvi, thanks for telling your story. Thanks for the work you're doing. And everyone listening right now, please think about how you can support and contribute to that this topic won't be on the agenda anymore soon.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Thanks for your time,
Madhvi. Yeah. Thank you for the platform. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of our series on circular entrepreneurship in Kenya. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.